Mitch, how dare you? How dare you on this holy day where Patrick Mahomes has been cleared to play in the AFC Championship game tomorrow? How dare you mess with everybody's emotions this morning? Dare I say it was an unprofessional move of you?
Oh.
To throw out there that Mahomes was out to begin one of your sportscasts this morning.
Get off your high horse.
I am all about professionalism here.
Duped for 2 seconds.
I cannot believe
you. And you can't handle it. Just because you freaked out for just a moment.
Man.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I was up early listening to K-Man's morning news this morning.
It wasn't even early. It was 8:45.
Early for me, Mitch, because, you know, I rise at the crack of noon.
Too many people out there just freaking out. Oh, is Mahomes going to play? I've been getting the question all week. Is he going to play? Like, that was a, hey, check the brakes, calm down a little bit. Everything's going to be all right. There's nothing to freak out about, but you just needed to hear you needed to feel what it was like to realize Mahomes maybe wasn't going to play for just a second and then realize he's not. And just think about that for a little bit and how much you are relying on Patrick Mahomes to carry your whole weekend in your life.
I already flirted with fan mortality enough over the weekend when I had to go a quarter and a half without Patrick Mahomes actually being in there. So I don't need that from you, Mitch. And I will say it is unbelievable the gall of you and Mason both, because he's been doing the same thing all week and all season, really. Like, oh, you Chiefs fans complain too much about this, and you Chiefs fans and Mahomes, and like, just shut up. You know, it's amazing the jealousy that shines through when you decide to plant your flag as a fan of a Jerry Jones enterprise. When you decide to plant your flag as a Dallas Cowboys fan, it's amazing how jealous you get very quickly of the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes' success. So I would just say, anybody out there who was rightfully offended, justly offended, by Mitch Fortner this morning on K-Man's Morning News, just know that it only comes from a place of jealousy.
Okay.
That's all that you need to know that and understand that.
I've said many times, you know, the deeper the Chiefs go into the playoffs, the more Mahomes is amazing. It makes my job more interesting. It makes it actually pretty fun to come into the next day and talk about the local team winning a Super Bowl. You know, that's pretty fun for me. It's easy content. It fills up the whole day.
Is it fun being unprofessional, Mitch?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, you're damn right about that. Now, that we can agree on. It is very fun to be unprofessional sometimes.
Especially if you pull a little joke there. A joke that lasted 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I was very quick to say that I was kidding.
Yeah, well, let's up the level of professionalism for the next 2 hours here, please, if we could.
By the way, Minute with Mitch coming up at the break.
Okay. You can tweet us at J.O. Kurtz. We're at the game KMAN. I assume this Minute with Mitch was taped before the news about Mahomes today that he is going to be good to go. He's out of concussion protocol, confirming basically all those reports. It wasn't really a concussion. Cole Manbeck was all over that from the word go. I have to give him credit, talking me down from the ledge in our group chat the second that it did happen. Now, there are a lot of things that we need to get to today. This is another one of those like topic roulette almost kind of days, because there are a bunch of little things that I need to touch on. Going from the Chiefs to K-State basketball right now, I mean, it's the penthouse to the outhouse. Like, it's in terms of what's fun to talk about here, it's not real fun to talk about this basketball team. There is a game tomorrow. They will play West Virginia. Bob Huggins is coming back. That's ground that has been traversed many a time before here on the show, Bob Huggins, to the point where I didn't even think today to try and get him on the show. I mean, we've done that plenty of times before. He's usually willing to do it, but I didn't even think about it today. He did have a quote, though, relating to Bruce Weber, and it's the kind of quote to me that comes out when fellow coaches know that one of theirs that they like is on the hot seat. Here is the quote, Bob Huggins. Quote, I think they've got the best young group in our league. Their freshmen are talented. They've got a couple veteran guys, and I think they get better and better with each game they play as their youth continues to get experience. They did a great job recruiting. If they can all stay together, he is going to have a heck of a team in a few years. I've heard quotes like that and would expect quotes like that from like Chris Beard before at Texas Tech, who multiple times in press conferences before here in Manhattan has talked up Bruce Weber, how much he loves Bruce. Mike Boynton is another one of those guys who seemingly loves Bruce. I don't have as good of a feel on him as to whether or not that's just how he is with everybody, because he's very personable and clearly a very good recruiter. So it may just be that he is that charismatic in talking about anybody. But those two I hear it a lot from and expect it from. Bob Huggins, I don't feel like I hear it quite as much. I have heard him compliment Bruce Weber before, but this quote seemed to be more him going out of his way. Now, to be fair, I don't know the context of like what the question was that was asked. I have not heard the actual audio of this. But this does feel to me like the kind of thing that you hear when other coaches in the league know the position that coach is in. They know that the walls may be closing in here. And certainly from a fan standpoint, it is in Manhattan. And that's why, I mean, we heard quotes like this, what, it would be 6 years ago now? 6 years ago in 2015, 2016, maybe 5 years ago, we'll say 5 years ago, when the Marcus Foster thing had just happened and it was Dean Barry and Cam, and you heard a lot of very similar things here. Now, if you would have had this quote at that point in time, I mean, you could have just copied and pasted this to 5 years ago and said, well, Huggs was right. That was a heck of a crew. This, to me, comes from the same place. They may well be truthful in saying, hey, I really like these freshmen. But I think in both cases, the coach is trying to fluff it up some. Trying to do their best to make this sound as, you know, touching up the resume here. Trying to make it as pristine as possible. Throw in some extra fluff here to help out a fellow coach of theirs that they like. And there's nothing really wrong with that. It's like the anti-bulletin board material. You're also in a situation, if you're Huggins, where I think, you know, you can come into this game not worried about too much, so you don't need to be too concerned with what exactly it is that you're saying about the opponent. I also think it does tell you that Bruce Weber is pretty liked, and I've said that before. I have no doubt that he is pretty well liked by other coaches in the league, and I think there's a good amount of respect there for what kind of coach he is, but I also think those coaches have a pretty good feel for what the job security is actually like here. And this, to me, is an indication of other people around the league starting to look around and go, okay, well, he may be in some trouble here. He may be in some trouble here, depending on how things go the rest of the year.
I'm not going to speak for you on this, but for me, I always know I think it's great when he comes back. It's just kind of a reminder that, you know, he was kind of the kickstart of what success K-State had.
He's a G.
And, you know, about 12 years after he left, you know, 11, 12 years once he left, the success K-State had through Frank Martin and Bruce Weber winning Big 12 titles, two Elite Eight runs, and he was the kickstart of that. And he has no reason to talk anything bad about K-State. He still loves it here. We had him on last year right before a West Virginia game, and he said nothing but great things about Manhattan. He's got a friend, a neighbor he likes to hang out with. They keep in touch. I think that's really cool. And I've always heard that Bob Huggins is just one of the best guys to be around in college basketball. Like, he's one of those guys that if he likes you, he's going to give you a hard time, poke fun at you. But that's a way of telling you that he likes you and he likes being around you. And you can't ask for a much better guy than that. Now, I'm sure when it comes to K-State's freshmen and him, you know, not exactly praising them, but, you know, saying some nice things and how they can be really good, I'm sure he's not exactly keeping up every day with what K-State is doing with its freshmen. He's aware of how young they are. I'm sure he's heard about Nigel Pack, but he knows about the K-State struggles. But I'm sure from what highlights he has seen, he's been impressed. I'm sure he's seen a lot from Nigel Pack. But unfortunately for K-State, Bob Huggins will not see Nigel Pack on the floor on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he hasn't been actually impressed by it, but I'm skeptical at deep down truth serum how much he would really truly believe this. I think it's a friendly thing to do with a guy that he clearly likes in the league. I also think it's something that is just, you know, I mean, it's like I don't know if it, like unspoken, unwritten rule would be the right thing to say here, but if, you know, your coaches, you're in a fraternity together, so it's like sticking up for one of your guys, somebody that's in a fraternity with you. If you're a coach, you know what it's like to be on the hot seat. Basically, every coach that's out there at one point in time has been on somewhat of a hot seat. So they can empathize. They certainly understand where Bruce would be coming from here. And I think Bob Huggins probably has a more intimate knowledge than some would of just what the tenor of the Bruce Weber era has been like from the fans, where Bruce has fought through a lot of that from the word go since he first got here in Manhattan, 9 years ago? So there's probably some of that that's draped all over this too. I think he has a more keen insight and understanding into the situation here than some do. So it caught my eye. Bob Huggins may do Bruce Weber no favors on Saturday. I certainly think that is possible. I don't really buy into that K-State's catching West Virginia really at a great time, or that it's going to be a massive advantage that they haven't played in a couple of weeks. That's already been covered here on the show. But, you know, what do I know? Mitch Palm is what really knows, and we will have Mitch Palm coming up in the 5 o'clock hour of the show. But speaking of this conversation, how hot is the seat right now? We'll ask Kelis Robinette coming up next. Kelis Robinette from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagles is with us here on the show. I have a bit of a bone to pick with you here, Kelis, before we get off and running with what's been a busy week for you, man, with that pen that you're throwing around, writing everything that you've been writing this week. I think we're going to have to talk about the fact that you're claiming now the president of the United States. And don't worry, this is not about to get political, but Joe Biden's middle name is Robinette, apparently. Which I didn't know until Kelis, you know, has been throwing it out there that, hey, me and the president, you know, we're just tight because we share this name. But Kelis, you don't share the same name because he spells it differently. So it is not the same name. I don't believe that you can claim to be one and the same with POTUS now.
I mean, he just didn't catch up with the times and drop the E. His family never did it somewhere along the way. I mean, my family's like name, you know, 8 generations ago had an E on the end of it too. We just wised up and got rid of it. So I think it still works. I don't know if I've shared this with your listeners before, but my mom has actually gone on whatever those lineage sites are. I forget the name of them, but she's genuinely found a link between our family and the Biden. So we do share a distant relative from many generations ago.
Wow. Okay. Well, basically, what I just deciphered from what you said there is that you are more sophisticated than the president of the United States is what you're trying to say.
Pretty much, yes. And someday, if I run for president, I expect that to get me bonus points for somebody, but I don't have the E on the end of my last name.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that we could all get this ancestry.com lesson.
Well, come on. If the president's name was Joe Kurtz Biden and he spelled it just a little differently, I think you'd still play it up, wouldn't you? You'd still claim it.
Well, if there were an E at the end of Kurtz, then he would be Joe Kurtzy Biden, and then it would not be the same thing at all.
Well, but if he pronounced it the same way,
I don't think I would be claiming that. You know, I hate Johns that have their name spelled J O N. Drives me insane. Okay.
Ooh. Big rivalry there, okay.
It is. It is a big rivalry. I don't like it at all. I don't like people assuming that my name is J-O-N. So don't do it. There's an H. That's very
important.
Well,
I don't run into many Robinettes. I've only casually met like one or two other Kellises online. So when I meet them, even if they spell them a little differently, I'm all over it.
I'm just picturing like a Kellis, like the old AOL Instant Messenger, like an AIM chat room or something with like 3 Kellises in there talking to each other. That's what I'm picturing.
Oh, I've actually got a story about that if you want to hear it real quick.
Yes, please, please.
All right, so this was, maybe 15 years ago now, but I was watching a SMU football game, and the kicker, they had a kicker lineup to kick a field goal. His name was Kelis Cunningham. I was hardly paying attention to the show, but the announcers on the game just kept saying, "Oh, Kelis Cunningham, great kid. Kelis Cunningham, he's this. Kelis Cunningham, he's, you know, from so-and-so." And I was like, man, I've never actually heard that my name on on TV before, even though it's not even my name. So I went and found the guy on Facebook, and I just sent a message, and I said, hey, man, we got the same name. We should be friends. And we're still friends today. We are still Facebook friends. No other connection than that. I don't think we ever talked, but he was like, yeah, cool, sounds good. And that's still friends today.
What is Kellis Cunningham up to these days?
I need to go check that out here afterward. I don't think he's kicking in the NFL, though.
Okay. That's a pretty great story. I'm glad we went down this road. I enjoyed that. That was a good payoff. Kellis Robinette from the Kansas City Star and Wichita Eagles is with us. Where does 50 points at Oklahoma and losing by a damn near 30 rank on worst performances of the year?
Pretty close to the bottom. I would say only probably surpassed by the Forte State loss. And maybe arguable with the UNLV game. I might be the only person that game really bothered, but it's still to me that UNLV was playing their fourth road game of the week and won in Manhattan by 10. Just still is wild. So I would clump it in with those three. I mean, Oklahoma is not a defensive juggernaut. I'm pulling them up right here on KenPom. Their defensive efficiency, well, it's better than it has been. They're 40th. So, you know, that's above average. Maybe I was giving them a little, not as much credit as they deserve, but still, the last couple teams that they played, they've all found a way to score some points. So I guess when they played TCU, they beat them even worse, 82-46. But everybody else in, you know, 60s, 70s. So to go in there and score 50 points, it's just sad. And I can see why Bruce Weber's a little frustrated afterwards. It seemed like everybody who tried to step up and save the day just had one of their worst games. I mean, Mike McGurley's actually probably been their best player all year. He scores, what, 3 points on 9 shots? Dejuan Gordon has to put up 14 shots to get to double figures. Just a very, very ugly game to watch, especially on the offensive end.
Yeah, and as it relates to Oklahoma's defense, they were 49th before the game. They jumped 9 spots in the efficiency rankings.
Okay.
With that performance. So that did help. I'll just start the conversation here because I think this is what everybody wants to know. It's what the fans at this point are talking about. There is a lot of season left, but how hot would you say the seat is for Bruce Weber right now?
I mean, I'd say it's warming up. By no means am I saying that it can't be cooled down or that it's, you know, so hot that something's set in stone here. But the way things have gone this month, if it keeps going like that, I mean, his hot seat would be very hot. I mean, you look at this, they've lost 5 in a row now, 6 straight Big 12 games. And the last 4 losses have all been double digits. Now, I understand the last 3 games have been, special circumstances. They only have 6 scholarship guys against Oklahoma State. Probably not going to win that game under any circumstances. Texas, they only have 4 guys who aren't limited. Probably not going to win that game under any circumstances. And then against OU, they had the good start, but they're playing Kasuki, who doesn't really know what he's doing. They're playing Casey Idiagu, who's extremely limited. Dejuan Gordon said he wasn't 100%. Nigel Pack's still out. These last 3 games, I would at least say, you know what, maybe pump the brakes. Don't overreact to these too much. Here in a week or two, you'll get a better picture of what this team truly is once they get healthier. But they're going to have to prove something over those last 10, 11, 12 games, whatever they may be, depending on whether that Iowa State game gets rescheduled. Because, if they were to lose like 15, 16 straight games to end the season, that would be almost impossible for any coach to come back from.
Yeah, and I would have thought at the beginning of the year that even if something like that did happen, I don't know what it is. I think there's something about you can see the numbers on paper and think like, okay, that would still be 2 years removed from a Big 12 title, and like how can you do that in COVID and pandemic? But then when you get in it and it's actually happening and you're experiencing like what it's like to be losing all of those games, it starts to feel different. And I think a part of that for me, too, is just how tough it is to, like, wipe that stain off of the players. That is not probably the way to say it. But, like, it just – there's a residue from losing that much over 2 years that players who have been in the program, like, that's a hard thing to fight. And next year you would be looking at – I guess maybe if Mike McGurl comes back, you'd have somebody that has won some games here. But you'd be looking at basically nobody on the roster – having really had any success here at K-State, and I think that's a hard thing to fight and battle, even if there is some talent on the roster.
Yeah, that's true, and I would add, I think probably what makes it harder to live it than to project it out before the season is because you're right. Coming into the year, Kansas State was picked dead last in the Big 12 standings, and there wasn't really any outrage about that. Everybody's pretty much nodded their head and said, "Yeah, that's what it's going to be." But now that we're in it and we're watching Kansas State not only lose but lose by double figures. And lose badly by double figures. I mean, against Texas, yeah, the final result was 15 with a hilarious backdoor cover. But if Texas would have kept their foot to the gas, they could have scored 100 in that game if they wanted. Oklahoma, they didn't let up, and they won by 26. So when you're seeing the scores get that lopsided, I mean, clearly if that kind of thing continues, then you got to start thinking about maybe making changes. But at the same time, like I just mentioned, I mean, there is a possibility that here after they get past this West Virginia game and the Baylor game and they get Nigel Pack back and Kasuki and Iziagu get some legs under them. Bruce has mentioned a lot of times there is a realistic chance that they come together and they start showing some real improvement. And that really, I think, is what needs to be assessed here moving forward, is that if this team at full strength looks like it's got a bright future, then I think you go ahead and roll with it. But if the results stay the same, what we've seen the last five games, then you've got to maybe think about some other options.
Yeah, and it is, I thought you did a good job pointing that out in your Q&A, and something that I will add on top of that is, I mean, there have been a couple of times here where you've thought that Bruce Weber was, like, I would compare it to that gif of the Undertaker that's always out there, where, like, the Undertaker is just, like, lying on the ground completely lifeless, and you think he's totally dead, totally done, and then he just rises up when you least expect it. I mean, speaking of Oklahoma, that Oklahoma lot, didn't they lose by 30 the Wesley Owundu year back, what would that have been, 16-17 before the playing game, and everybody thought he was done, and then all of a sudden they turned it on at the end of the year and then went on the run to the Elite Eight and the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great comparison. Yeah, I still remember that game when they went to Oklahoma, and you know, people thought, boy, this is a really make or break game for them. If they win it, they'll be in good shape for the NCAA tournament. If they lose, it'll be hard for them. Then they lose by 30. That was pretty much the height of the last time there was a lot of disgruntled fans when it came to Bruce Weber. There was a lot of turmoil. It seemed like unless he could rally the troops, sneak into the NCAA tournament, it'd be hard for him to come back. But he did exactly that. They came back and played great the rest of the year. Made it. They won that playing game against Wake Forest. Almost scored 100 points in that game. Just come to think of it, it's like, holy moly, where did that come from?
Yeah.
We should bring that back. But yeah, then they go on and have these great seasons. So I was talking to a friend the other day who said that if there's any one thing that Bruce Weber's really great at, it's when his back is against the wall, he finds a way to do like just enough to satisfy people. And I would even point back to earlier the season. They lose to Fort Hays State, and people are in an uproar. And then they come back, and they win four of their next five, with the only loss being the one of maybe the best team in the country, Baylor. So I was actually listening to his radio show last night, and he had a quote that I thought was pretty good. He said, I think I got it here, he said, I know the year has been difficult, but this group has been good to work with. And I think that at least shows that there's some possible light here, that these guys aren't giving up. There's no quit in them, and we don't know what West Virginia is going to look like tomorrow. They might have some guys out. Maybe this is a chance for K-State to take advantage of some COVID issues instead of vice versa, and maybe they surprise us. I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, we'll talk about that coming up next, because I am not anticipating that K-State's catching too terribly much of a break, but we'll see what Kellis thinks about that. And I want to know Kellis' thoughts on the Bob Huggins quote that we opened up the show talking about today, sticking up really for Bruce Weber and what he has here. You're listening to The Game. So I'm doing some checking of Mitch's favorite KenPom here during the break, and I'm looking at what's coming up for K-State. Did you see, Kellis, what percentage chance KenPom gives K-State to win at Baylor next Wednesday?
I'm looking at it right now. Yes. I'd say it even the number that's shown seems a little high.
Well, KenPom, Mitch, gives K-State a 1% better chance than you and I going to Waco to play that basketball game. K-State has a 1% better chance than you and I do to go beat Baylor in Waco, according to KenPom. That's it, 1%.
Well, I will remind you that KenPom also gave Kansas State a 100% chance to beat Fort Hays. Didn't happen. So there's always a chance. You're telling me there's a chance.
That I forgot about that. That is a great moment in KenPom history there, yes. I mean, it does feel like, and I'm with you that Bruce has had moments throughout his tenure where you think he's dead and gone and comes back and is able to figure some things out. I'm also with you that if they can stay away from more COVID issues and keep the roster and the team together, that things could come together the rest of the year. But the next four games, there is the game against Texas A&M thrown in there. But outside of that, it's West Virginia at Baylor and at Kansas. I mean, these games that have been played against the upper echelon teams in the league for K-State have not gone well at all. It just feels like, for as much fan outrage and frustration as there is right now, experiencing the next four games, especially if there's a loss to Texas A&M mixed in there too, like that could really do a lot of damage as far as just where the momentum is from not necessarily the people that matter, but people that matter to some degree in the fan base here over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, they're facing an uphill battle. When you're looking at Texas A&M being the easiest game left, unless they can add Iowa State at the end of the season, you know, that's not great. I just mentioned so if you're telling me there's a chance, Jeff, now I'll say, not great, Bob. That's if you pull out right now looking at this. But, I mean, like I mentioned, West Virginia at home, I don't think that's unwinnable. I think under the circumstances, there's a glimmer of hope there. At Baylor, given what Baylor did to him here a few months back, like I just said, even 1% chance of victory doesn't seem that seems a little generous. But then after that, you know, Kansas, as hard as it is to traditionally win an Allen Fieldhouse, hey, you know, maybe the magic's gone this year. Texas won there by 25. That's really all I can say about that, but. Yeah, I mean, the schedule's hard, but hey, if K-State can win some games, then that shows against the schedule, it shows they legitimately are improving. I'll say that.
Yeah, you think what are you hearing about West Virginia? And I mean, how much of a shot do you actually give K-State here, knowing that Nigel Pack is not likely to play again?
Yeah, I mean, if Nigel was a full go, I really think K-State could pull the upset here. I still think there's a chance. Just because I don't know what West Virginia's lineup is going to be like. I went back and read a transcript of what Bob Huggins said. He really wouldn't commit to anything one way or the other. It sounds like they've had more guys out due to contact tracing than actually COVID. So maybe that helps them. But at the same time, they've been off for 2 weeks. They have been practicing a little bit, but they haven't played at all. And Kansas State does traditionally play West Virginia pretty well here. They beat them last year at home, believe it or not. So maybe there's some good juju there. It really just depends. I mean, if they come in and they have a lot of guys who are limited and they can't play their full, you know, hard-nosed style, then maybe that helps Kansas State. But at the same time, I'll say I was expecting – I laughed out loud when I saw that Baylor was favored by 21 against K-State earlier this season. That's when K-State was actually playing pretty well. They'd just beaten Milwaukee. They'd just beaten Iowa State. And Baylor hadn't practiced or played in like a week and a half. I thought that was ludicrous that the oddsmakers would give them a 21-point edge. But then Baylor came out and played like I don't know, like they were just in the zone and scored 100 points, won by 31. Maybe the time off helped them. So the exact opposite could happen. Maybe having this time off gets them more focused and comes out and they play even better than usual, which would hurt K-State. So I really don't know what to expect here. I think it's going to be kind of a there is some uncertainty to it. I would certainly favor West Virginia. I think they probably win. But, it's like we mentioned with the whole Undertaker thing, maybe the world's starting to go against Kansas State. They're hearing a little bit, and they come out and play a little bit more focused, and at least they put an end to the double-digit loss.
Yeah, and I forgot about this one. If we're talking about Bruce Weber Undertaker moments. I mean, two years ago? God, it's crazy. 2 years ago, K-State starts 0-2 in the Big 12, and then they had the massive first-half deficit against West Virginia, right? Am I remembering that game correctly?
Yeah,
that was 2 years ago?
21
points, and they come back and win 71-69, and then rip off all of those wins consecutively to win the league.
Yeah, that's a great point. I thought they looked miserable back then, too, and they ended up winning the league. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's definitely going to be an Undertaker moment at some point this season. I think they'll jump up and upset somebody. There's just too many games left for it not to happen. But the question is just, when's it going to happen? And once it happens, can they build up that momentum and actually turn it into something, or is it just going to be a blip on the radar?
What did you make of the fact that Bob Huggins had the quote that you posted it on Twitter? It says, "I think they've got the best young group in our league. If they can all stay together, he is going to have a heck of a team in a few years." Is that I would tell you that I think Bob Huggins is not wrong in liking some of what is there with the freshman group, but that seems to me to be fluffed up a bit, like exaggerated a little bit, to stick up for a coach that I think he just likes and respects in the Big 12 and understands what the tenor of the situation is right now here.
Right. I probably agree with you. I think there's a shred of truth to it. He's certainly not just pulling that completely out of thin air and saying, "I'm going to pump this guy up in hopes of making him look good and so that he sticks around and we can keep, you know, beating him every year." Maybe there's something to that too, but I don't think that's exactly totally what it is. If you look at Davian Bradford, he's a freshman and he's probably the best young center in the entire league. I really like him. Nigel Pack, when he's been healthy, I think he's one of the more promising point guards and three-point shooters Kansas State has recruited in a while. And Selton Miguel, if he can develop a left hand, I think he could be really good. And then Luke Kasuke, hey, he made a three the other day. We still don't know about him. So, I haven't studied everybody else's freshmen. Kansas State is a little bit more freshman-heavy than most teams. I'd maybe say that Oklahoma State is a little bit better just because they have Kate Cunningham. But, there is some truth to it, but I think there's some gamesmanship to it too. Mike Boynton said the same thing. Chris Beard likes to really talk up Bruce Weber. I think all these guys are friends, and I do think there's something to the fact that you raised that when Big 12 coaches, unless it's like Bill Self and Bruce Weber talking about each other, I think they like to come to each other's defenses. I remember when Doc Sadler, when he was in the conference in Nebraska, I mean, that guy could not win more than like 4 or 5 games a year in conference play, but every coach in the conference talked about him like he was Dean Smith. When Frank Martin would get ready to play with him, play Nebraska, he would talk about Doc Sadler. He would pump up Doc Sadler like he was already in the Hall of Fame. And they were friends. They liked each other. They wanted to make him sound good. And I think there's definitely some of that something. I'm really screwing up here, but I definitely think that's part of the reason he said it, but it's not unfactual either.
Man, Doc Sadler, how about that? What a pull that is. I loved to make fun of Doc Sadler back in
him
the day.
And Pat Knight, that was his name, right? Bob Knight's son.
Oh, Pat Knight. Wow, man,
people,
what a time.
People talked about him like he was Coach Krzyzewski. I mean, I remember the day when Texas Tech fired him. With some games left in the season, it was like right before we had a press conference with Frank Martin, and we told him about what just happened, and he went on like a 10-minute diatribe about how horrible it was and how great of a coach Pat Knight was. I mean, man, good old days.
Did when Huggins, because it sounded like you listened to this, when Huggins said this quote, did it sound like this?
I think they've got the best young group in our league. Their freshmen are talented. If they can all stay together, he's going to have a heck of a team in a few years.
Is that what it sounded like?
I mean, there were some more pauses in there. You probably talked a little too loud. But other than that, pretty good impression.
Okay. I'm actually impressed with myself on that. I think that was a very good Huggins impression.
No, it was good. But, yeah, it's I don't know how the guys who are around on this beat covered him for that 1 year. You can never really tell when he's done talking,
yes, it's crazy.
it's Yeah, I mean, you basically just have to sit there and give him like a 15-second berth around everything he says. You never know when he's going to jump back in. Otherwise, you're just totally cutting him off.
Yeah, like I am always perplexed. Like that is a show that we could do some summer. We just need to talk about like our memories of all these different coaches and like things like that from a media perspective that we find interesting that I don't know if other people do, but I find all that stuff obviously very interesting and fascinating. Anyway, Kellis, we appreciate the time joining us here. Go slide into Joe Biden's DMs and see if you can, win him over that way and report back to us next week.
All right. Well, maybe that'll work. I will say that when my mom told my children that we were somewhat related to Biden, they were convinced they were going to get an invite to the White House. So I need to start working on that.
Yeah, you do. You do. Professor Kellis needs to get on that. All right. Take care, Kellis.
All right. See you guys later.
Bye, Kellis.
Do you do that on purpose?
Well,
so
yeah,
it sounds like he hangs up on us.
Yes, because okay. I'm waiting to hear if he ever is going to say back, bye, Mitch, okay. And we never get it.
I ruined the bit there is what I did. I had something very funny that I wanted to play for you. I don't know if we're going to have time for it. We'll see you next. So found this to be very, very funny. Joey Molinaro, who is a Barstool guy. I'm not really a big Barstool fan typically, but I do find him to be very funny. And like the cool indie band, I knew him before he was blown up on Barstool, right? But he put out a video. You know what? I'm pretty sure this is... I'm pretty sure he doesn't curse.
Oh, boy.
I'm like 95% sure. I'm going to have to listen to it. And then we can play it for you in hour two of the show. We only have like 2 minutes left here anyway. I'll err on the side of caution here. I don't think he really curses much in his stuff, but I'm just, as I'm saying out loud, like, oh, this is a guy from Barstool, and I'm about to just, you know, play this thing with no protection on the air. Can't do that. But I'll give you the topic here. His video is a local sports talk host on First Date. And I laughed so hard that, you know those times where you're like laughing so hard and you're like, I'm laughing too hard here because it really just like hits too close to home. You know, it hits too close to home and it's like, oh, this is too true. So I'm like laughing to take away from the pain here. Now, I think I'm a great first date, actually. I would tell you that I'm a tremendous first date.
But after that first date, you know, it's downhill from there.
Yeah.
You peak on day one.
Well, not exactly. I mean, I could give you the list of problems, most of which don't have to do with me. But this was quite hilarious, him imitating a local sports talk host guy on a first date. And not only that, but in the video, he's like drawn on a goatee on himself. Like he's got a little scribbled in marker, like goatee around him. It's perfect. I do think that I really break the stereotype of typical, you know, local sports talk host guy because I'm very attractive, like to dress nicely. Mitch complimented me on my denim the other day. So, you know, I think he would agree with that. I have some new boots today that I'm very excited about.
What kind of boots?
They're Chelsea boots.
The hell is Chelsea boots?
You never seen Chelsea boots? They're very popular. It's a style. It's like a style of boots. Chelsea boot. Just Google it. I know that I have 8 seconds left. You can keep Googling it. I know the time. I've got it. I'll make sure this audio's okay and play it for you.
Oh,
and we'll get to Mitch Palm next. Your town, your community, your local news.